Radio and KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico. It's time for a little local flavor with your host, Raul Turrieta. A tasty mix of red, green, or Christmas conversation. A stimulant to the appetite that exceeds the minimum daily adult requirement for music, weather events, updates, and lowdowns in southwest New Mexico. So take your vitamins, tuck in your napkin, and we'll provide the rest.
Programming on GMCR is made possible by its members and supporters, including Western New Mexico University and the McRae Gallery, presenting Pen, Pencil, and Print, an exhibition of original works on paper from the WNMU Permanent Collection. An opening reception will be held on Thursday, January 26th at 6 p.m. and will be on view through February 16th. More information at wnmu.edu/culture.
And here we go. This is KURU 89.1 FM here in Silver City, Nuevo Mexico. You can also stream us at gmcr.org. My goodness. Man, we are actually having a live remote right in the middle of Bullard Street, man. It is cold out here, George. What is going on here?
Yeah, it's really cold.
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe we're outside doing this wonderful radio show at, about 25 degrees outside?
21.
21 degrees. No, it feels like it. We're outside in the middle of Bullard Street. But you know what, Georgia? It's January 25th. And I'm going to tell you, man, what a beautiful day here in Grant County. Things are rocking and rolling. And you know what? Life is good. What do you think, George?
Yes, life is good.
Man, are you excited? Are you excited about today? This local flavor show and everything going on?
As soon as the blood begins to circulate, I will be excited.
Tell you, man. I don't know. It is what it is. Hey, let me tell you, did you get to watch the football games and everything?
I sure did.
All right.
Pretty exciting weekend.
Well, you know what? We got these two wonderful human beings in this. Well, they're outside. They're outside also.
We have our coats on.
I know. I saw. We have Sarah Zamora, and I'm telling you, man, you look like you just came from Minnesota.
Put my hood on.
And then we have Kathleen Norman from the museum. How are you guys doing this morning? We're going to talk football for about 5 minutes. You okay with that?
We're Go doing great. It. Yeah, and then we'll follow you and talk about all the exciting things happening at the museum.
Is there exciting things that happen in the museum?
Of course there is.
Oh, okay. All right.
But first I have to give an update that it's actually January 26th today.
It's the 26th.
You missed
I'm already
a day.
Corrected. 26.
It's a good thing you're here.
Well, I am so glad you're here. You know, I'm a day behind.
For archival information, we need to know it's Thursday the 26th.
26th. George, why did you tell me to say 25th? No, I'm just joking. I'm not laying it on you, George. But no, man, things are rocking okay, man. Did you get to see the games this weekend? I was so excited. They were really good games. I don't know if you guys saw them, but I know George did. And honestly, I just see everyone's giving Joe Burrow a nickname, and there's two words for his nickname. It's Snow Burrow. Did you hear about that, George?
No, I didn't.
Oh, my goodness. That's right. The only game. You know, that was amazing. I can't believe Buffalo lost in Buffalo, in the snow, and Burrow just put it all together.
Yeah, he certainly did. But, you know, I don't know if you noticed this, but there are a whole lot of players playing in all that snow without any sleeves.
Do you know what the secret? Do you know what the secret is, what they do? You see them without sleeves and stuff. They actually use that, like that heating balm, and then it's like putting Vaseline on, and it kind of heats them up. So whenever you see that, it's actually some kind of a heating balm that they put on the arms. Did you know that, George?
I did not know that.
Well, you know what? When you're about 21, 22 years old, and the weather, the cold, nothing bothers them, especially in a big game like that.
Well, I thought that Joe Burrow gets extra credit points for pointing out that the NFL is going to have to send back a lot of refunds.
I know for that canceled game. Well, you know what? I just got to say this. Buffalo should not have anything to say because they took the home field advantage. They were the number one seed. They should have played in a neutral area, you know, with Cincinnati after the situation that happened, you know, when they canceled that game. So they should have been in a neutral zone. It is what it is, okay? But the reality of it, man, Cincinnati, man, they are just on fire.
Yeah, they really are.
I can't believe the point spread in Cincinnati. I mean, it is one and a half. And then you look at the Eagles spread with San Francisco is 2.5.
Right.
I was shooting about 4, but it's 2.5. But they are so evenly matched.
Yes, they are.
And oh, but did you see that some team called the Cow Punchers or Cow whatever? Did you see those guys like playing against San Francisco?
Actually, it was kind of hard to see them because they didn't show up.
Well, you know what? I got to correct that. Just like Sarah corrected me on the date. Thank you, Sarah. I was texting guys from back and forth after the third quarter, and I said, you know what, man? What's going to happen is the defensive Cowboys did fantastic. Okay, they did phenomenal. The only thing is, I knew they were not going to hold it on the fourth quarter. You know, Kittle and McCaffrey. There was no way possible they were going to hold them, and that's exactly what happened. And then, did you see Dak? I mean, did you see that guy, Dak, the quarterback from the Cowboys? Dak, I don't know whatever his name is. He was so mad on the sidelines, he threw his helmet. Yeah. You see him throw his helmet? Guess what? It got intercepted. Come on, that was a good one, okay, George?
That was a good one.
All right. Okay.
Raul, I have to point out that Fox News did a better job covering that game than NBC did. From the week before, they did not show a single picture of the moron.
The JJ guy? Yeah. JJ? Yeah, I know. That's a good thing, no matter how I look at it.
I was very happy to see them lose.
Well, I wasn't, I'm a Philly fan. I'm letting everybody know, Philadelphia fan. I am the man. It is what it is. And the reality of it is it's going to be a good game. The positives about the game there is they're playing in Philadelphia. And guess what? I know they say, well, the thing is their defense. They got a defense. And guess what? Philadelphia has a quarterback. All right? So, like I said, it's going to be a good game. Things are going to rock. And we're going to put it all together. So, I'm kind of excited. So, go Philadelphia, all right?
All right.
Well, you know what? We were going to talk about the price of eggs, but we're going to move on to the museum, okay? Would that be all right?
That'd be great, Raul.
Okay, all right. I just got excited about the games, and, we're going to do the picks in a little while. Okay, George?
Okay.
All right.
Well, this is Kathleen, and I wanted to talk a little bit about our community conversation series. And this spring, we're going to be focusing on community building. We're going to take a look at how our town developed into the great place that we love today. We'll hear about who was involved and how that happened and where people got together to make our town a better place. Silver City, as we know it today, was accomplished only through the efforts of our citizens. We take a look at how this has changed through the years, both where we get together and why. We're a diverse group of people. We've got the longtime natives. We've got people whose great-grandparents lived here when this region was still part of Mexico. You've got the mine employees. You've got the students at Western. And then you've got newcomers like me, and many of them are retirees. We've got the artists with their vision of bringing downtown alive with galleries and studios and shops. So how did we get here, and how do we create a community from such a varied bunch of people? And where are we going from here? Those are questions we're going to be asking at these three spring programs. They're on the third Saturday of March, April, and May at the historic Silco Theater on Bullard Street. And you know the format, Raul. Each session starts with a speaker presentation, followed by a panel discussion and questions and dialogue from the audience. We're inviting people from different groups as our guest commentators to share about what their organizations are all about. And I'll talk a little bit more about each program, but first I think Sarah wants to share with us about our territorial charter ball.
It's quite interesting because when you said people coming from all over, we even have wife golf pro. I mean, what more can you ask for? Oh, did I say it? I am so sorry, Sarah. That had a. I apologize, Sarah. My goodness.
So fast. I didn't even get a chance to talk.
She definitely came from all over.
Boy, she is. She came from all over. She's done so much around this whole world. And, and I'm so glad that you're here. And you're such a big asset here in this community. So I just had to throw that on there. I'm sorry, Sarah.
I know. You like to poke at me.
Oh. But you look good with that. Big old Jack, you look like you just came from Minnesota or something.
I just came back from Mexico, so it's extra jarring how cold it is. But I'm glad it's a sunny day.
Oh, I bet you the weather down in Mexico was phenomenal.
It was good. It was.
Oh, good. Let's go to Mexico, George.
I'm for it.
Okay, here we go, Sarah.
I'll leave
go ahead.
Now.
So our next big event at the museum is the Territorial Charter Ball, which is the mayor's special little baby.
Yeah.
And it's going to be February 11th at the Murray Hotel. And you can get tickets at the museum or at Vintage Fantasies. And it's going to be the Illusion Band is performing. And it starts at 7 o'clock. And it's going to be a lot of fun, dancing, everybody dressing up. They suggest period formal attire, which I know Raul's going to have to kind of shift through his closet to pick the perfect outfit.
I bet he wears that top hat, though.
You know, he's got to wear the top hat. You know, I've been wanting to wear a derby one of these days just to wear it, just for the heck of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But no, I'm kind of excited about that, and it's such a big event, especially Territorial Charter Day, and it's quite interesting because I get a lot of people from out of town wondering, what's a charter? And then I get a lot of them saying, man, I wish we had a charter, you know, but the way everything started, what history, you know, that is with the 100 years. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
It will be a lot of fun.
And then you got the Illusion Band, man. You got Monica and Ricky and Rick and, you know, the Montes, man, and then you got Andy. I know them all. And you know what? I hope I get to sing with them. Oh, no, I'll run everybody off. All right. Stop it, Ken, all right? But matter of fact, Ken just came in, and he's kicking back, and he's looking good. But so that's – I'm telling you, that day on the 11th is all kinds of things going on.
No one can leave town that day because we have a lot of fun stuff happening that day.
Well, so I'm going to have to cancel my Super Bowl tickets to go to Territorial Charter on the 11th that night. Is that what's going to happen?
Exactly.
Okay, so I'm going to have to – anybody want any Super Bowl tickets, I'll just hand them out, okay? And not only that, that weekend is also the Waste Management there in Phoenix and Scottsdale, Arizona. And, oh, my goodness, that is a show to see.
So,
you know what? Everything for Silver City, we're not leaving. We have the Chocolate Fantasia going on. And Love Local. So we're going to have Gretchen and Sharla. They're going to be coming on the show on the 3rd of February. So, man, things are rocking and rolling in Silver City. Mm-hmm. And why are you here? Why are you here, Kathleen?
Well,
why?
I'm here to help out with these spring programs, the community conversations to help us look at Silver City, how we got here and why we're so wonderful. How did it all happen? So on March 18th, we're going to look into historic gathering places here in Silver City, and I will be your speaker for that program.
Have you heard a talk there, Sarah?
I have.
I have not. I have not been able to see one of your presentations or hear your presentation.
That's March 18th at the Silco. And, you know, like we were saying, people met for many different reasons, and they met in many different places. In the early years, they got together in the saloons or the churches or a lodge hall or a ballroom at the hotel or even a bodega or a cantina on Chihuahua Hill. People got together for fun, but they also got together to solve problems and share their ideas and launch improvements. So in the early years, we had the Apache problem. We had to bring the railroad to town. We had flooding and rebuilding. There was a need for a hospital and schools, and we made our bid for the Normal College. So gradually, the town came together and grew as a community. And we also had a lot of fun doing it. And we're going to talk about some of those places, and that's going to be right into your era, Raul. You know, where are some of the places that you went as a kid or with your parents or as a teenager?
Quit laughing, Ken, all right? you know, backing up just to hear, like, Territorial Charter, you know, having a government, bringing in our schools and so on. I mean, how exciting, you know, all this this turn of event, especially we had Doug Dinwiddie on the show and talking about you know, the Santa Fe Ring, how everything was signed off, you know, all the everything that was going on, not only with the mining industry but also here in Silver City. But you know what, born and raised here in this community, it's just quite amazing, because a lot of people here in this native land, I mean, they don't know how good they have it here in Silver City. And then I see a lot of people coming in from, you know, out of town and so on, and saying, what a beautiful place. It's just amazing that we all get together. We all work together. Look at these events. These events, everybody gets together and works together on it. I mean, it's just amazing. And let me tell you, it's so boring here in Silver City, Sarah. You know how that is.
It's overwhelming how much there is to do.
There
you
really,
cannot ever say it's boring.
So many choices.
You know, it's funny because on the Capilla, if you actually look in Chihuahua Hill, you know, my father and we had an hour special for a gentleman by the Andy Padilla. And he was 92 years old. They were all raised up in La Capilla. And I'm telling you, the stories that these guys pretty much, you know, talk about the Capilla, and you look at the subdivisions up there in La Capilla compared to Black Subdivision, Fraser Subdivision, the dynamics and the changes of the homes, you know, and how these people live compared, you know, in the main areas here. So, matter of fact, I'm doing a land study right now here in Grant County, and it's going to be really exciting, especially here in Silver City. But you know what? All the familias there in Chihuahua Hill, everybody knew everybody, okay? And I was asking Stephen Fox one time. I said, man, look at all these photographs he was showing us and whatever. He goes, there's not very many photographs of the Hispanics. We go, well, they didn't have cameras. And he pretty much, you know, stated on that. But the thing is my areas where I really enjoyed going to was the Big Ditch. Mm-hmm. I mean, we used to get in trouble for going to the Big Ditch, you know? And I'm going to disclose a couple things. My uncles back in the day is whenever the, you know, they used to have the monsoons and so on, would actually go down the Big Ditch, and he would scrape, where the rocks and the walls were, looking for gold. And he would actually find little pieces and nuggets of gold from the rains coming down from Pinos Altos. Oh. And it was quite interesting because he would actually do that after a monsoon and so on. So, Patsy Madrid, she would actually have some stories about going down by the bridge in the Big Ditch, and they knew there was something was going to go down, but that was back way before my time, all right? Yeah, no, and I'm not even going to – sorry, Patsy. But at that time, they knew when they were going to get next to the bridge, they were going to, you know, throw blows, you know, have a fight or whatever. And these are women.
No. <Yeah.
laughs> I remember talking to her about that, and it was quite interesting because, oh, my goodness, you know, and it was just like, you know, you settled your score, you go down to the Big Ditch, and it is what it is.
That's where it happens.
And that's where a lot of things happen down at the Big Ditch. And we used to walk it all the time. And I guess at one time we wanted to do, pretty much get the trails together, and look at where we're at right now. Oh, my gosh, have you walked through all these trails down by the Big Ditch?
Yeah.
Lots.
Yes. It's a lot of fun.
Many times. Yeah.
And with the history, mm-hmm. you know. And, you know, right now I'm looking over here at the Adobe Springs. When my father, you know, that was actually a gas station, a car parts store, and so on. Oh. And right next door, you had the car dealership called Busby's, you know, with the old Chevron, Clifton Chevrolet, and so on. So there was just so much history on it. Looking in Silver City, has it changed? The reality? Not really. People are nice to each other. We have small populations. We got a phenomenal mayor. And like I said, we all have a good time and enjoy. And then look at, we bring George from Minnesota or Florida. Where are you from, George?
Both.
Come down here and meet people like you and Catherine, you know, Ken, Canuto, even though he's from Los Angeles. A lot of people from out of town. And how did they get here? How did you get here? How did you get here, Kathleen?
Word of mouth. I met somebody from Silver City. I met her in Denver, and she was so praiseworthy and excited about the town and couldn't wait to come back. I had to come see it myself, and that was 25 years ago, and I've come back several times, and every time I just felt like I could live here. And I felt the welcoming of people. I mean, people were so friendly and nice, just me as a passerby. I felt like I had friends before I'd even moved here, and I'm very happy to be here.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was very happy that we went up to the New Mexico County's conference, and we were up there in Santa Fe. And Dr. Rosser, you know, here's a guy that's famous on iHeart, Dr. Oz, and so on. I mean, the guy is just amazing, and I can't imagine how he found Silver City. But the way he talked about Silver City and was grateful to be in Silver City, I mean, we got some hardball hitters. I mean, I don't want to bring up the guy's name, but, phenomenal people like your husband. I mean, he's down here. He has turned this place around in a lot of ways. And it just seems like, all these wonderful people to come down is just doing very positive things for this community. Look at the museum. We got you.
Exactly. And Kathleen.
And Kathleen, you know, we got Ashley, we got
Bart.
Bart from New Jersey or Rhode Island, wherever he's from.
Rhode Island.
Rhode Island, I'm sorry. Bart, I know you're hearing the gentleman from Rhode Island. And you know what? And he's done so much, in this community. So my deal is the way I look at it, I try to get the gente involved, the community, the people.
You're good at uniting people.
Putting people together. And like the museum, a lot of them haven't even gone to the museum. You know, a lot of the homies, you know, or the people that are around here. And there's just so much history. Like, what's being displayed right now at the museum? Can you tell me what's being displayed?
Right now we have a great exhibit that I've mentioned here before, the Life and Times of Arturo Flores, who was a union worker during the mine strike.
The zinc mine strike, yes.
And then he went on his whole life advocating for workers. And the exhibit is, in fact, his whole life and the things that he has done.
And photographs he took.
And photographs.
Well, that was pretty much the same time whenever the women were actually striking there on the the lines, and they actually got put in jail with their kids. You remember that, George?
Yes, I do.
We had a couple presentations, talking about that.
That's right. One of the great things about Silver City, one of the great contrasts is between our museum and the museum in Bisbee, Arizona. You know, in Bisbee, there was a great deportation where the mine owners rounded up anybody they thought was a potential union man, and they loaded them onto a train, and the train stopped in Deming and left everybody off in the middle of the desert. There's not a single word about that event in the Bisbee Museum, at least none that I could find.
Oh, interesting.
You know, this is a much nicer place, you know. The community did come together, and they did prevail. The mine owners could not deport them to Deming. You know, it is a tremendous contrast between two places.
But you look at North Hardy and South Hardy, okay? My father spoke a lot about North Hardy and South Hardy, and even our past representative Rudy Martinez, where they actually had two swimming pools, one in North Hardy and one in South Hardy, okay? The one in North Hardy was a little muggy, and the one in South Hardy, and you did have the separation from the Hispanics and the Anglos from North Hardy to South Hardy. And you look at it and say, well, no different than, like, being in Mississippi or, you know, Louisiana or whatever the case. And there's a tunnel. Have you seen the tunnel there in Hardy?
No.
You guys got to witness this. It's actually going to be on the National Historian with the tunnel from North Hardy to South Hardy. They had one store. It was a merchant store where they actually would have to go from North Hardy. The Hispanics were in the North Hardy, and the Anglos were in South Hardy. So they actually had to walk underneath the tunnel, and they had to check how much money they had before they go into the mercantile to buy their food or provisions or whatever the case. And the tunnel still exists. And my father would always talk about a lot about that. And not only that, they had two swimming pools. They had
are you talking?
We're talking back in the 50s.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, wow. And you really think about it, it really wasn't that long ago. And I remember, and I'm going to mention some names. I'm going to mention some names that really come out in, from the mining district. And you look like Flate Martinez, and you actually have from the local 890, the steel workers. Murray Ryan, he was actually, working during the mines and so on at that time. And not only that, you had the Howdykes. Howdykes were actually working and so on. I'm telling you, and I literally knew these people and spoke to them. And here we are, and I know I'm not as old as Ken. Sorry, Jed, but I remember a lot of these stories that were actually brought together. Sorry about that, Ken. But
how long have you been in Silver City, Ken?
Me?
Yeah.
I've been here about, I guess, 44 years about. No, I've been in New Mexico 44 years.
I've
been here 24 years.
Okay.
So he's been around, and because he started
my family's
by
90. From here, New Mexico.
And I got to acknowledge this one individual that I remember. She just passed away. She was 90 years old. She was actually the first chief deputy assessor that I worked for, And his brother, his name is Tommy Ryan, and he was actually the marshal here. Uh-huh. He was the chief of police here in Silver, and he knew a lot about what was going on with the territorial charter. And at that time, with Millie's brothel house and so on, you know, and Mildred Cousy, more than anything else. Well, she passed away, and she was my actual first chief deputy that I ever worked for in 1981. And I looked at her, I said, oh, my goodness, 90 years. And the lady that actually worked with manufactured homes, she died at 94 years old. So all these, I call them the old gunfighters. I mean, we're losing them there, Sarah. You know?
Well, it sounds like assessors have longevity, though. That's good for you.
Don't say it, George. Don't you say it, George. Go ahead, George.
I think that Raul will be here forever, if not longer.
No, let me tell you, it's been a wonderful ride here, you know, in this wonderful small community. And I'm so glad that I've had people from California that have come and visit. Goes, how in the world can you live in this small community? There is absolutely nothing to do. And I tell them, I said, look over there. You see that mountain? There's 3.3 million acres, you know. Take a hike. Choose a carrot. Whatever you need to do. I can't believe, you know, that there's just so much to do here in this small community. And then you look at the events that we're doing. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things, and I don't want to use the word lectures, you know.
Community conversation.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you changed that. Because mm-hmm. you say, well, we're going to listen to a lecture here, a lecture there, and whatever. They're phenomenal. I really enjoy going to those.
We like to bring in different conversations. And then on April 15th, we're going to have Susan Berry talking about some of the early community groups and how they can contribute to the larger community, some of the things they've accomplished. And as you know, she was the museum director for many years. So in the first years, we had groups and organizations spearheading all kinds of things, education, health, charitable efforts. Yeah, the Guadalupin, help me pronounce this, Guadalupin Niños.
Guadalupin Niños, yes.
The Silver City Women's Group, the Elks and the Masons. And then later came groups like LULAC and our arts organizations, the Gila Native Plant Society, the Grant County Archaeology Society, not to mention the Lions and the Rotary and the Chamber of Commerce and the VFW, the American Legion. So it's going to be a challenge. We won't be able to mention everybody, but we talk about how each group had its place and its purpose. So our challenge, again, is mentioning most, but not all of them. And do you have any examples? Did I leave anybody out, Raul?
Well, George? Let me just say, I bring up there was some individuals where a lot of people don't know. You know, they used to get together and, you know, who was going to run for what office and so on. And there's a gentleman that he still exists, you know, and he's still in politics. He's in his mid-80s and so on. And there was an organization there at the Manning District whenever they would run for office. They were called Los Apaches. And they would actually set the stage and who was going to run for office and so on. And but, you know, they weren't part of, you know, like the Lions Club or whatever.
Official.
But it was, yeah, it wasn't official. But they actually,
society.
And they pretty much ran it. And like the LULACs, my uncles, there was two uncles that had two LULACs. At the same time, because one didn't get along with the other. And, I mean, I could tell you stories about that. And, you know, and there were my mother's side of the family, and there were the Sierras, and wonderful human beings. I mean, they literally ran the community back in the day. But, no, there was quite a lot of other organizations that were, you know, that were tied here in Silver City. But, I don't know, I look at this place. I love this place, born and raised here. I can't believe that I've been in, like you said, the longevity in county government for the last 42 years.
Wow.
So I'm up there in the conference this last week for the New Mexico counties, and I'm sitting there and I'm saying, oh, my gosh, I've come up here for 40 years.
And they're looking at you going, and, he's been up here for 40 years.
Get him out of here. But, no, and you know, bringing the history, I mean, you got really historians like, you know, Stephen Fox. Mm-hmm. And then we got Doug Dinwiddie. Susan Berry is amazing. She's phenomenal.
Her mind is like a steel trap.
And she, I know, she just goes and goes and goes. And not only that, she's spent a lot of time in the county courthouse. You know, we still have the old courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that I had the opportunity 12 years ago. I can literally say I saved documents from the basement, and I still got them stored there in my office there at the admin building. So, let me just put it this way. you don't get rid of these documents. They're they live forever, and we hope that we can actually save them. And Susan, that's exactly what Susan does.
And they tell the story. And then at the end, our last spring lecture, May 20th, we're going to have Javier Marufo talking about how the media has influenced the town's development and influenced community awareness. So we've got some of those old historic newspapers, and we're able to tell the early story from that, how those newspapers shaped Silver City, how it shaped how we were seen inside and outside of New Mexico, how the town was seen by visitors and travelers. And then we always like to bring things to the present and say, how is that carried on today by our newspapers, our radio stations, and the social media? Because in those very early days, we had a newspaper called Mining Life, and it was trumpeting Silver City, and our mines were going to be bigger and better than any of the silver mines in Colorado. And they were trying to bring into town investors and merchants and miners and others. But the newspapers also helped shape the town, and the editors pointed out problems and urged solutions and praised the civic efforts and accomplishments. So the media has really played a part in who we are today. And Javier is going to be talking about that, and then we'll be inviting some people from the different media to join in that conversation. And the audience can ask questions. You know, we just really like to take a look at the past, but also see how that brought us here today and how that's taking us forward into the future, you know, making history relevant.
And is Javier going to bring up the El Reportero?
Yes.
Oh, we got to talk about that one. Yes. That was amazing, and I got to hand it to Stephen Fox bringing that up. But you know what, George? Man, I am cold, George. It is cold in here, man. So you better turn on a heater or rub two rocks together. Do something, man. I mean, or send us some money, man, so we can buy a heater or something, George.
Well, I guess our listeners are hearing your plaintive wail. If you want to save Raul, if you'd like to keep him warm and happy, it's a simple thing to do. Just go to our webpage at gmcr.org, click on the donate button, and you'll find a plethora of ways to make a donation to our station from the safety and comfort of your own computer. Or if you'd like to come downtown, even though it's cold, it's still nice to come downtown. We're at the corner of 6th and Bullard, directly across the street from the Silver City Food Co-op, and our door is always open, willing, and available to accept your donation. Or you can, if you just rather mail it, you can to GMCR at 519B North Bullard, Silver City, New Mexico, 88061.
And not only that, George, I always like Ken Kepler's idea. Let's get state funded, all right? You know, he said that because now, you know, up at 9 o'clock, we're going to have a gentleman from TRC by the name of Glenn Hamilton. He actually is the undersheriff for Sierra mm-hmm. County. And thank you for Susan Mays and New Mexico Counties. You know, they send a flyer out that he's going to be on. So we got the whole state listening in right now. So guess what? We need more money. Right there is just like Dr. Rosser says there, George.
Yeah, absolutely. But just to make it clear to our listeners, we would never take money from the state of New Mexico. We want to maintain our independence.
I'm talking about the people donating from the state of New Mexico, George.
Yeah, well, you know, they're not going to do it.
they're going to send money.
Especially the legislators, they don't get any money. They don't have anything.
You know, that's the whole thing that I hope that they do pass that piece of legislation where they get paid, because we're the only state of the nation literally doesn't get paid with our legislatures. And that's another thing. If you really look back, you know, talking to Sarah and Kathleen, you know, with our legislature back in the day from the Santa Fe Ring, I mean, what history. And a lot of it, you know, was pretty much given through Silver City, New Mexico, because we were very popular because of our industry, and that was the mining.
We had the mineral wealth. Mm-hmm.
Man, how exciting to hear all these, you know, stories about Silver City, and then bringing it up in the museum to actually make it live and in person on top of that.
And then to explain why we have here, you know, what we see, the downtown, the different areas, you know, how it all came to be. And I think it gives appreciation to the people who helped create it long ago, you know, the people who lived the story and made the town the way it is. So I think it's really important to mention them and their efforts and their projects. And again, these community conversations are co-sponsored with our partner, WILL, the Western Institute of Lifelong Learning, and they're always scheduled the third Saturday in March, April, and May are our spring series. They take place from 11 to 12:30 at the historic Silco Theater at 311 North Bullard Street, and we'll also be Zooming live from the Silco.
And not only that, this year the Silco is going to be 100 years old.
Oh, that's right.
You got to talk about 100 years old. You know about that, George, don't you?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, well, just see
those. You know, Raul, one of the things which is really nice about the community conversations is they're archived. They are on the
That's right.
History Museum webpage. So if you don't have the chance to go to one, you can always find out about it.
Well, thanks.
And listen to it.
Thanks to Sarah, she had me dress up as Uncle Sam during one of the conversations and
to lure people in, and it worked.
And all of that, yeah, it did, man. I walked all over downtown, and it wasn't even the 4th of July. And the interesting thing is, you can actually go back and listen to the conversation. That was great.
Exactly. And,
thank you very much.
If you're not available to come down, they're also on Zoom. They're live on Zoom at the time.
That is fantastic. And bringing up, the 100 years.
Yes.
Here we are. We're going to have Territorial Charter Day, coming the 11th of February. And then now we got 100 years of the Silco. That's how exciting. Any big plans on the 100 years for the Silco?
I don't know. I'm sure they're doing something.
Yet. We'll have to talk with Kim. And
hopefully they'll have a cool T-shirt.
They should.
They should.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sarah.
I'm just putting it out there so that they start thinking what they're going to do. That I would buy a T-shirt.
Actually, if you remember, I believe that Kim has gone back and found the name of the first film that was shown at the show.
That's right.
That's cool.
She's looking to see if she can find a copy of it. It's probably doesn't exist anymore. But they're definitely planning on doing something. That would be great.
That would be awesome. Hopefully we can get her on the show also, because I know next on the 3rd of February we'll have Sharla and Gretchen from the Chocolate Fantasia, and also from the Main Street with Sharla. They got plans, and like I said, we're not leaving on the 11th of February, right?
Nope. All roads are closed off to people leaving. People are welcome to come, but we need everybody in town to participate in all this fun stuff happening on one day. I mean, you can devote one day.
Well, it's going to be an action-packed day, and then do a little bit of dancing and prancing down at the Murray Hotel.
Get to dress up.
That's the coolest part. Yeah,
that's going to be fun.
It's just so much fun, dress up, and you feel like you're in the 1800s. I'm not going to say anything, George or Ken, but it is a lot of fun being here in this small community here in Grant County, Silver City, and once again, things are moving and shaking here in this community all the time.
Exactly.
So let me ask you, through the whole springtime, they're going to have conversations, and then you'll do one for the fall.
The summer.
And the summer. Okay, and it's just going to go on and on. You've got the Ice Cream Social coming on in July. You look at just event after event, and just to promote, here in Silver City.
We end the year with a Victorian Christmas. Yeah, it's really...
Oh, yeah, I forgot about Victorian Christmas there. Sarah?
Well, actually, I had a conversation with Father Christmas yesterday.
Oh.
He's planning on coming back.
Oh, man. Well, oh, Merry Christmas. We're only 11 months away.
We have a problem.
Well, no, not a problem. And then, like I said, would you mind, so people can relate, the staff members there at the museum, because they've done such a great job. Can you mention a few of them? Would that be okay?
Absolutely. We have a brand new exhibits manager, Tom, who came from the Corning Museum in New York, and Kathleen, and we have a couple part-time people, which is good for the museum. We have
David Phillips
and Lloyd Parker.
Lloyd, yeah.
Marcus.
Not to mention Marcus Hansen.
the great Marcus Hansen. He does everything.
Well, you know, he does. Go ahead, mention it, George. You know what he does here for this wonderful radio station.
He keeps us on the air.
he knows where the on and the off button is. All right, that's where it's at. No, he's phenomenal on a lot of things that he does here, just on the radio station. But you know,
it's worth mentioning that one of the things that Marcus does is he communicates with all of the members of the board of directors of this radio station, which, quite frankly, is a job which is practically impossible. He does a great job with that.
And I know he's working for our salaries here in this, you know, hopefully we can hit the six-digit salaries here in this radio station. He's working on it, isn't he, George? Yeah. They're going to add another zero to it or something in the front and back?
They'll add a lot of zeros, yeah.
But no, let me just say, go ahead.
Have you ever done an oral history with Javier?
You know what? I have. I've spent some time with him, and I told him, I said, Javier, man, I got to get with you, bro. I mean, I got to talk to you because, you know, I know the familia with the Marufos. I know the familias from, I mean, the majority up there at La Capilla. And matter of fact, I had this one lady, and I'm going to mention her name. She's actually was also brought up in La Capilla. We started talking stories about La Capilla, and she's probably also in her 90s, and I think Javier, I don't know if Javier has talked to her about it, and she has just been phenomenal about talking. And let me tell you, talking about memories, I mean, these people remember everything. I mean, they just literally remember, just like Andy Padilla. And I even told Javier, I said, one day I was playing golf with Andy, and I recorded him. And I even told him, I said, man, you mind if I record you talk about the Capilla? So I got him on film.
Oh,
I
mean, fantastic. That's good.
You know, little things like that. And hopefully that, you know, share that. But no, I have not. I need to get with him. I really need to sit down and talk to him and mention quite a few items that my father used to talk about mm-hmm. the Capilla. And you know what? I do want to thank Javier and, you know, Bart, the museum, to bring that back. Just like I was mm-hmm. telling Kathleen, mm-hmm. I said, did you ever guys hear about the El Reportero? Woo, talking about a newspaper.
Oh, really?
And it was actually from Joe Bingman from the Greg Mesa. Mm-hmm. And the gentleman still lives, and I think Javier needs to talk to Luis Quiñones, Dr. Luis Quiñones, and he lives there in Las Cruces. And we've been on a couple panels with Stephen Fox and what's that other gentleman, Stephen? Man, I can't think of his last name. George, help me out. We've had him on the show probably about 3 weeks ago. Shift, I can't. Okay.
It'll come to you.
Yeah, it'll come to me just like everything else. But to have the history of La Capilla, I'm so glad that Javier's on it.
Yeah.
But one of these days, I'm going to spend some time with him, hopefully, good. If I ever have.
You know, we better mention some of our other colleagues, Ashley, the collections manager, and Shannon Wilson, the volunteer coordinator. And she's bringing us the children and young adult education program, trying to tie together with the schools to help the teachers share with their students more about our local history. And we've got Melody.
And she's created a curriculum even.
Yes, the curriculum.
That goes to their state standards. You know, now teaching is so much to standards. She's using the New Mexico state standards to make a curriculum that relates to the museum so that the teachers can use the museum as a resource.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So I come from out of town. First thing I'm going to check out and see is the museum. Okay?
Right.
So I'm from, you know, I'm probably outside of Houston or Phoenix or whatever. Can I get on a website there and just start seeing what's going on in Silver City? Do you have that website that people can hear? Would that be all right?
You can get to it two ways. You can get to it through the town. We have our own section on the town website, but it's silvercitymuseum.org.
Silvercitymuseum.org. It's quite interesting. I went and played ball this Sunday down in Tucson, Arizona. And it was just a pickup game because our league doesn't start until the week after Super Bowl. The important Super Bowl, you know that game, you know, that mm-hmm. game that has 500 commercials and the game only lasts 13 minutes. you know what I'm talking about. But
the halftime show.
Yeah, the halftime show. Rihanna. Rihanna's going to be the halftime show. That's going to be interesting, no matter. It's going to be interesting. But, no, so I'm hanging out with these guys, and we're doing, you know, quite a few pickup games. And it was a little park called Santa Rita. And we drive up. It was a little interesting, you know, because a lot of the, you know, I feel bad, you know, a lot of the homeless, you know, there, you know, hanging out in the park, and we're going to play ball there. So the first thing they said, man, I can't wait to go to Silver City. And I said, really? Because we have a big tournament in August. And I think we need to make big tournaments. And this is senior softball, okay? These are the, you know, these are the old guys, you know? Mm-hmm. And they always want to come down a few days early. They either get, you know, a place for the week, you know? They don't want to leave. They want to come here early, and they leave a couple days late. And we're talking about Silver City. And I'm the only guy that goes down from Silver City, you know, to go play in Tucson. And I tell him, I said, man, you guys got to go check out the museum. You know, and so, you know, and they're, matter of fact, they're listening in, quite a lot of them from Tucson, Arizona, on this radio station. And a couple of more Cowboys fans, but it's okay. You know, we'll forget about that. But honestly, it's amazing when they come down here, you know, especially in the middle of July or August. How hot is it in Tucson, Arizona, or Phoenix, Arizona? Boy, glad to run, come down here and play. So I think we better set up more tournaments down here. Mm-hmm. What do you think there?
I think that's a great idea.
I think you need to be on that, Raul.
Thank you, Sarah. I really, really need to be on that.
Does the monsoon season complicate that?
Matter of fact, it really does. Mm-hmm. It's quite interesting because, you know, I've studied so much about ball playing, and like I said, and, you know, being here, I mean, it's very big when it comes down to baseball. Just talking to Doug Dinwiddie, you know, mm-hmm. it's just amazing. But, yeah, it does make a big deal. And you have to put all the games in. So mm-hmm. they actually, if we're running out of time, they actually do what they call a one-pitch tournament.
Oh.
Have you heard what a one-pitch tournament is?
No, what's that?
What it is you only have one pitch. You either strike out, you walk to first base, or you hit the ball. That's it.
Oh.
One pitch. I mean, I've enjoyed it. I've liked playing it, you know, but you have to put all the games in. So it's a one-pitch tournament. So the pitcher pitches one time per batter, and you either get on board, you strike out, or you fall out or whatever. And that's how they get the game together, but they rush it, and it goes by real quick.
You know, sure.
What'd you say, Ken?
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Is that a good idea? Mm-hmm. You want to sit there for 19 innings?
I want one more. There's one hike.
Here we go.
Game. The very first one.
George.
And after that, it's
the game over.
The game is over.
All right?
4-minute game. That would be, even at that, it's a long
time. It's extra good. It's really good for your older players also.
Yeah.
Can play. Then they can talk about how many games they played.
Man, I played 9 games. And there was only 13 pitches. No, but yeah, it does. The monsoons. And you know what? A matter of fact, I had people from Los Angeles during the monsoon season. They just wanted to come down and see the light show with our, you know, with the lightning and the monsoons and everything. And they literally would come down just for that and spend a weekend here in Silver City. And I say, good, good. Come on here. Spend your money. And let's mm-hmm. have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say,
and hope for rain.
And hope for But I'm going to tell you, the way it's been raining, is, you know, I went to Pinos Altos yesterday to, you know, look at some properties, you know. My job, you see what Misty does? Now she sends me out in the field. I'm out there looking at properties out there, George.
I am so
Misty,
sorry.
Man, you got to stop it. No, so I was out there, still 4 or 5 inches of snow. Everywhere.
Oh, gosh.
In PA.
Wow.
7,080 feet is
really
the elevation
different from
in PA.
Last winter.
Oh, yeah, I'm telling you. And it's so nice just to see all that mm-hmm. snow up there because I live in Pinos Altos, you know. Mm-hmm. Sarah's been to my house. You know, mm-hmm. She's been there, her and Lynn. And at that time it was raining. And George
gets lost
every time he gets – go ahead, George.
Did you get stuck?
No, but we did get lost. I'm on Team George.
Yeah, George got stuck and he got lost and I had to send out a – and send out the flares and everything looking for him. Glad I found you, George.
So am I.
But no, and you know, you look at the history also, not only in Silver City, you know, we got to incorporate Pinos Altos. You know, you had the second courthouse there.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one was in Santa Clara. And look at what Santa Clara is doing. And the museum has really helped out a lot. Bart had helped out a lot, you know, during the Tamal Festival. You know, they helped out in incorporating, you know, with the chancla throw and stuff like that. I mean, it's just a lot of fun, and everybody gets together and, you know, put all these events together. Not only just Silver City, it's the whole county. And that's exactly what it's all
about.
There's
something going on all the time. Yeah, and that Fort Baird film series is tonight.
Oh, can you talk a little bit about that?
I can't.
So it starts.
Roy Rogers and Roy Rogers and the Lone Ranger. Two movies on that topic, and it starts at 6:30. The doors open at 6, and it's at the Santa Clara Armory.
At the Armory, yeah, they used to do that. You remember that, George?
Yeah, they're still doing it.
God, that's exciting.
The Lone Ranger, man. He was my hero.
Was he your hero? Yeah, that's right, because it's going on Fort Baird, and it's quite neat. But I got to throw another first. There is another first in the nation, and I'm telling you straight up, okay, George? You know, we talked about it with Carol Ann Fagali.
Oh, yeah.
Is the first? You better lay it out. Come on, man. I'm so excited. I was there Monday for the unfolding of the bioreactor. Okay, so go ahead, George.
You know, Raul was honored by the Chamber of Commerce to be the Citizen of the Year, but that pales in comparison.
Don't touch it. Can't touch that. Can't touch that.
What's it called? The New Earth Coalition or a name similar to that is running a program, a very great program involving kids and the schools, where they're converting the food waste from school cafeterias into compost, and they're doing it in a special way, a unique way, and they're using a collection facility called a bioreactor. And this week, this very week, they named one of their bioreactors after Raul.
So
Raul has...
I actually had heard that already, even. That is big news. You are a lucky guy.
Hey, let me tell you. Go ahead, George.
Well, maybe you should have a picture of it up at the History Museum.
Yeah. So I'm kind of excited because Nan was there, and Nan's from the radio show here for GMCR. .org and
Ramblin' Nan.
Yeah, Ramblin' Nan. She is amazing. And you know, we were out there. We hugged each other. Carol Ann Fagali was there, and we're ready to. You know, they're gonna pack in my bioreactor. And I told her, and I said, you know, Nan, I'm not. You know, I hope you don't take this in any offense, but she took it with honors. And I said, I've heard so much about you, Nan. As a matter of fact, she's the one that. Helped out putting the Victorian Christmas together. Mm-hmm. She's a heck of an organizer, great person to be around. And I said, can I call you the compost queen? I am honored. I am totally honored that you even, you know, placed that name on me.
That's who she wants to be first and foremost, is the compost queen. Everything else is just there.
But it's amazing because we're actually the first, to do that. And when they did the breakdown on exactly how they do this with the composting, not only using biochar and so on, you can actually, the revenue just on this is going to actually save agriculture with doing this composting. And it is amazing because you're doing it by waste, you're doing it by the shrubs, the thinning of the source. Now they're organizing to get with the Forest Service with all the cuttings and mixing all our food waste. And it's amazing. They do these... bioreactors, they mix it all up, and I'm talking trash compactors and everything to mix all this, and they put a thermometer right in it. It's probably 28 degrees outside, over 150 degrees. How all this is making this compost? It's just an amazing. So they're just making reactors. So the first 10, you know, I was lucky enough that. Named one of the reactors, bioreactors, and so I contacted.
Not the first bioreactor.
No. I'm fine with 10, 11. I don't care. You know, as long as my name's out there, it's fine. No, I'm just joking. But and so I spoke with Susan Mays, and also hopefully with the board of directors of the New Mexico counties for them to share this information, because it could be revenue. I mean, it's amazing what this soil can do, and we're going to talk a lot about that. So they're actually Carol Ann is actually going to do a presentation in front of the New Mexico County, so the whole state can hear exactly what we're doing. And thanks to the Climathon, out of all out of the whole United States, there was only five of these grants, and Silver City was the one that got one, and we're kind of one of the first to do this. So what is it, the Johnson
Compost.
Composting. So I'm telling you, it is just amazing. If you guys have a chance, go out there. It's right there by where the Armory in Santa Clara. Drive in there. They'll give you a presentation, and it's just amazing to watch. So Silver City, once again on the map, George. Grand County, once again on the map. What more can we ask for?
It all goes back to what we were talking about before, how this community is such a wonderful place. And
absolutely.
How we've distinguished ourselves in so many different ways. But this really is the future for
and
us.
Using a whole different natural resource than what we're used to using.
Well, it's cutting edge agricultural technology, and Silver City is really the leader of this. And if we can keep it going, it's going to bring a lot of jobs, really meaningful kinds of work, which hopefully will keep our kids here.
Yeah.
Kato in Grand County. I know we're hitting the top of the hour. Sarah, go ahead and throw out about the old territorial charter on the 11th of February. And
once again, it's the Territorial Charter Ball, and it's the 11th of February. Tickets are available at the museum store. And if you haven't been in the museum store, it is a fabulous place to shop. And it will be dancing, dress up, and drinking. The territorial tonic will be the signature drink. And we would love to have everybody there and have a fabulous evening.
And
at the Murray Hotel.
And the tickets are limited too, right?
Yeah,
so
of
make
course.
Sure you get your tickets.
Because the Murray Hotel ballroom is, I think it's 100 people.
So make sure you get your tickets. It's a lot of fun. And being at the Murray Hotel is what it's all about.
Exactly.
And celebrating Territorial Charter Day. So go ahead there, Kathleen.
Well, just wrapping up about our spring programs, we're very excited. And again, that is the third Saturday of March, April, and May at the Silco Theater. And you can get more information also on the Silver City Museum's website or the Will website. So again, I really appreciate the chance of sharing some of the details with you this morning.
And you know what? Hopefully before March, I would like for you to come back so we can we've had Stephen Fox. Mm-hmm. We've had Doug Dinwiddie here. We've had, you know, a lot of the presenters. Mm-hmm. We're, you know, let them share, you know, let's get the secret out and, you know, and let's talk a little bit about the event and so on.
I would look forward to that, Raul.
That would be fantastic. So, man, let me just tell you, man, this is KURU 89.1 FM here in Silver City, Nuevo Mexico, and you can also stream us at gmcr.org. And let me just say, this wonderful radio station has just everything pretty much live on the air. What things go on, I mean, I just dig and find or whatever, so we can be the first ones to share a lot of this information. Up next, we're going to have a gentleman by the name of Glenn Hamilton. He's the undersheriff from Sierra County. He's been on the show quite a few times, and thanks to Susan Mays and New Mexico Counties, we really spread all this information out statewide, nationwide. You even have somebody in the other side of Minnesota or Florida, Georgia, that's listening in.
have my friends in Brno, Czech Republic.
Okay, and Czech Republic. So thank you very much for coming on there, Sarah Zamora.
Thank
and
you
Kathleen.
So much for having
and,
us.
We're gonna
thank
get
you
for back
having
on.
Here.
It's a lot of fun, so stay warm. That's all I got to say.
Yeah. Okay.
So let's take a small break here at KURU 89.1 FM here in Silver City, Nuevo Mexico.
Trying to track me down. Yeah. They say they want to bring- was the deputy. I say I shot the sheriff, but I swear it was in self-defense. Yeah.
Hilo Members Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico, and online at gmcr.org. Welcome back for the second course of Local Flavor with your host, Raul Turrieta. You never know exactly what's on the menu, but just open wide and prepare to say, ah. Take a sip of cool, clear water, clear the palate, say excuse me if you burp, and enjoy our feast for the ears here on Local Flavor.
Programming on GMCR is made possible by its members and supporters, including Western New Mexico University and the McRae Gallery, presenting Pen, Pencil, and Print, an exhibition of original works on paper from the WNMU Permanent Collection. An opening reception will be held on Thursday, January 26th at 6 p.m. and will be on view through February 16th. More information at wnmu.edu/culture.
And we are back here at KURU 89.1 FM here in Silver City, Nuevo Mexico. I guess I was a little bit slow. No, George was a little bit slow. Once again, this is KURU 89.1 FM here in Silver City, Nuevo Mexico. Is that okay, George?
Yeah, that works just fine.
All right, it just worked fine.
Yeah, we could. I barely hear you, but that's all right.
Then Ken, are we giving a mic to Ken? Are we actually going to be doing that?
Well, it's important that Ken.
Oh, okay. You get the mic. Yeah. All right.
I got the right. Mic. Good, I'm glad.
You don't want to
we need an antidote to you.
Okay, orale. Stop it, man. Jeez, man, here I am with a very popular guest statewide from TRC, from Sierra County, by the name of Glenn Hamilton. Yeah. You know, he was a sheriff, now he's the undersheriff, and he's one of those longevity guys when it comes down to county government.
I just want to point out, before we get into it, Mr. Hamilton was wearing a white hat when he came in.
Well, he wore
it's important to know, for everyone to know. He was wearing the white hat.
One of the good guys.
And not only that, I always tell him, real men wear vests. So I wore my vest, and he has his vest on. So, you know, we're the good guys, all right? Is that all right?
Absolutely.
Okay, sounds good. But you know what, Ken, before we move on, you know, we are going to do the football picks, right?
Yeah.
I'm not going to have time tomorrow. So where are you going to go?
Why not?
You did okay, but you didn't do okay because you lost against which
Buffalo.
The Buffalo, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Well, we all lost against Buffalo.
That's right.
Heidi won Cincinnati. We all lost against Buffalo. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm. We know about that.
So, okay, 49ers or the Eagles, my Eagles?
49ers or Eagles?
Or the Eagles in Philadelphia. That's a place up in the other side. Oh, you're going to go for the 49ers?
And so am I.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Glenn, help me out here. Come on.
I'm going to say advantage Eagles, but...
You're going to go for the
49ers? Yeah, I haven't been following football for quite a few years, but hearing some of the scuttlebutt, I know the 49ers can have the momentum coming in, but... I think advantage Eagles.
Yeah, they're the Cinderella. They're the underdog, you know, and you're looking at Philly has a point spread of 2.5. So that's the advantage. You're right, Hamilton, that they do have the advantage, and they're playing in Philadelphia. But the difference is, man, I'm talking against you guys, is we got a quarterback, okay? The Cowboys didn't have a quarterback. They had a defense. We got them both, defense and quarterback, all right?
Well, I'm not going, you know, I don't know anything about football. You know,
I just love the shirt that he's wearing, and I played my fiddle outside of Mississippi, so I'm going to go for the Mississippi Apples. Is that what you're trying to say there, Ken?
I said the 49ers. I didn't say Mississippi Apples. No, don't get confused. I know you're
I'm already
confused.
In
your mind, they're the same. You live in this little town here. You don't know the difference from San Francisco and the little town of Mississippi, man.
Well, yeah, Dr. Rossi would probably go for Mississippi. So that's what
I doubt it. I'm going against the odds because I've had to litigate against Philadelphia lawyers.
Oh, no.
I just don't like them. Well, there's a song about them, too, you know.
Almost definitely. Yeah. I do a lot of bluegrass stuff there. And we actually
refer to
that song as the only bluegrass song with a happy ending.
Yes, right.
Ken, I forgot. You play the mandolin, right?
I do.
Oh, yeah.
Ken, I forgot. He should join us one of these days with the crickets. He'd be phenomenal. I've seen him play.
Yeah, so we schedule a show where it's just all music. So live music in studio.
In the studio. There you go, Ken.
Yeah, we do that.
All right, we got to go for what's going to happen with Kansas City and Snowboro, man. What's going on here? Okay, so we got to go either Cincinnati or KC. They're playing in KC?
Kansas City, because my niece lives there.
Is that the reason why? Yes. Because your niece lives there in Kansas City, even though Mahomes is going to have issues with that ankle.
Who?
Mahomes, the quarterback. Mahomes. You know, the guy with the helmet on, has a number in the back of the shirt.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, all right.
What's the number?
Boy, 11. Thanks a lot, kid. So, George, who are you going to go for? He's going for KC?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go for Cincinnati.
I got to go for Cincinnati. I'm not really a Kansas City fan. But hopefully, and that's a really, really tight race. That's 1.5 points apart. So it's going to be a good game. Kind of excited about all that there, George.
The games this weekend are going to be really good.
So, you know, I got to hand it for Jacksonville. They did phenomenal.
Watching them.
Mm-hmm.
Too bad I won't be watching them.
I know Glenn's going to watch them. You're going to be watching them, right?
Probably not.
Okay, all right. Jeez, man.
It's this side of the table.
I'll be playing music this weekend.
Oh, you're playing music this weekend?
Me too.
I've seen him play there at the golf course. They have a little patio outside where the food is phenomenal there, man. Let me tell you, the course is awesome. The food is awesome. And he was out there playing his mandolin. Yeah.
So what kind of mandolin you got?
I play a Gibson F9.
An F9, right, yeah.
So F9's called the no-frills F5.
Right.
F5's got all of the pearl inlay and all the decorative stuff there. But,
there's a lot of things about mandolins and who made them at the Gibson factory. And I have an old, 1918 A model. But I also have one I made. Peter Strusko plays one I made, too.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
It's on my retirement bucket list is to make my own mandolin.
Yeah. It's fun.
Hey, can I make my own kazoo? Is that okay, man?
Kazoo, you can make your own kazoo. Yeah, all you need is a comb.
As long as a comb.
A comb and a piece of tissue paper.
I was going to say wax paper and a comb.
And that's it, huh?
Yeah.
Jew's heart might be a little more difficult there. Yeah.
Okay, come on. You guys are getting funny now.
I can loan you one.
Well, you know, we have Glenn Hamilton. He's actually from, matter of fact, I've sat with him on the board of directors for the New Mexico counties. I mean, this guy's been around. He does a lot of, talking to the governor. He's actually been part with the legislative council. I mean, this guy has pretty much done it all. And so you're thinking of sticking around as the chief deputy? I mean, as a undersheriff.
So I'm actually sticking around as the Sierra County undersheriff through the 90-day transition period. Actually looking at the executive director position for New Mexico sheriffs.
Okay.
So basically for the entire state's association of 33 sheriffs. That position is likely to become vacant here about mid-year. And so I've been asked to assume that position. I've had the legislative liaison on our executive board with the New Mexico Sheriffs Association for approximately 6.5-7 years now, at least the past 7 legislative sessions that I've been working in that capacity. So I continue to serve the New Mexico Sheriffs Association as their legislative liaison, I'm going to stick around as the undersheriff only for a few months to get through that transition. We've got the new sheriff's got evidence room audit and inventory, stuff like that. So my 28 years with the agency there makes that transition go a lot smoother whenever you have the experience to kind of point as to where this came from and where that come from, and makes that hump a little more of a molehill than a mountain.
Go ahead, Joe.
I think our listeners would be interested to know that you can find out about the New Mexico Sheriff's Association if you go to their webpage.
Correct.
Do you happen to know what the web address is?
I believe that's nmsheriffs.com.
Well, you know what? Right now, full swing, you know, with the legislative. We just got back last week from the New Mexico County Legislative Conference. What a phenomenal conference. They did a fantastic job. And what networking goes on up there, it is just amazing. You know, we had the opening session. We had Dr. Rosser opening session. And then we actually had some key speakers, not only for the luncheon and also the closing session. So it's quite interesting that, I mean, they're in full swing. It's a long session. And right now you're looking at about your introduced bills in the House is 88 bills right now, and this is current, and 240 on the Senate side for the 2023 legislative session. So a lot of money up there, a lot of things going on. And then I know you sitting on the board of directors for New Mexico counties. We're actually going to be talking about the priorities, you know, for the New Mexico counties, and has a lot to do with law enforcement.
So, yeah, we've actually been very successful as, for a long time, the sheriffs didn't have a lot of representation on the New Mexico County's Board of Directors. Myself and Sheriff Cage and Sheriff Shepard over the past few years were able to get placed on that board. And as a result of it, during our legislative conference, or pre-legislative conference with New Mexico counties, we were able to get a lot of the law enforcement issues moved forward through our affiliate as priorities. I know for at least the past 4 years of legislative priorities with New Mexico counties, there's been at least one law enforcement bill that has been pushed forward, or a priority that has been pushed forward on one of their top five.
Great. Well, you know what, Glenn? I know that, like I said, the experience that you have, you know, you moving on, you know, I understand where you're coming from. You've been in there for 28 years, you know, helping out. Probably know where a lot of things have gone on within the last 28 years, you know, and you look at the experience, we move on. I've been there 40 years, and I'm sticking around for another 4, hopefully. But so how's it going in Sierra County? Is there a lot of vacancies going on? It's hard to keep sheriffs around nowadays.
You know, law enforcement in New Mexico and nationwide, but specifically, you know, we deal with New Mexico, we deal with our individual counties. We are having some serious issues in recruiting and retention. As many New Mexicans may be aware, there was a pretty good pay increase that was approved during the 30-day session for the New Mexico State Police. And as a result of it, many of your municipalities and your sheriff's offices actually had some of their staff that moved over and took advantage of the higher pay opportunities that come from the state police. I know I lost one really valuable deputy and had three that had actually applied for the lateral transfer, still in the process of going through the testing. The problem with that is that, you know, once they move over, then now we have to either look at are we going to recruit a new officer, entry level, or are we now going to seek maybe a lateral transfer from one of the sister agencies or neighboring agencies? And a lot of problems that we're having here in New Mexico, obviously, small counties such as Sierra County, we're not one of the richest, we're not necessarily the poorest, but we have problems attracting a lot of qualified lateral transfers, those individuals who have already been certified, had at least a year or two of law enforcement experience with another agency, definitely have issues or have concerns over whether we can even get individuals, attract those individuals to leave their current positions and come to a county where, I keep telling everybody, it's not about the pay in Sierra County. In Sierra County, it's about what we have available to you, especially during your off time. We've got a wonderful lake. We've got mountains. We've got hunting. We've got fishing. We've got hiking. We've got outdoor stuff that perhaps maybe some of the other areas may not have.
And a great golf course. Let me tell you, that's a beautiful, beautiful course. I remember what's called the Oasis. That is a nice, nice course.
Yeah, when the Turtleback came in and the development company came in and revamped the old Oasis there, and, they did a great job, and it's definitely one of the premier courses in southern New Mexico right now.
So under the recruiting and retention, that's actually one of the under the House Bill 2 appropriations, you know, public safety. Under the public safety package, that's one of the priorities, and I think it's very important. The breakfast for the legislative conference with the legislature. They have it at 7 o'clock in the morning on Thursday morning. I showed up in one of and our governor actually showed up, and one of the biggest things that she was talking about is they're going to allocate over $100 million to, you know, increase for the for bringing in more police officers. And I think that's a heck of a thing to do for over $100 million. That's pretty impressive.
That's a lot of money. You know, during the 30-day session last year, there was, I think, $18 million that was set aside for recruiting and retention. As a matter of fact, Sierra County received about $131,000. There was some confusion when that first came out. We were notified, actually, last September, that we were awarded as a result of a survey that went out through the Department of Public Safety. Not every agency in the state of New Mexico, from municipalities to sheriff's offices, not every agency they may have received the email, but they didn't respond to it, thinking that it was something other than what it was. So they didn't respond to the survey, and as a result of it, many of the agencies missed out on some valuable funds.
Oh, goodness.
So we're glad to see that there's more money that's going to be put into that. There was a second round that actually went out around November of this last year from the original retention monies from the 30-day session. So we're able to actually utilize those as a result of House Bill 68 from last year's session, which gave agencies the ability to offer retention bonuses for those individuals that are currently in the agencies, but also for recruitment bonuses, sign-on bonuses. Again, that's helped out in some cases, but because in that first round there were a lot of agencies that missed out on it, I'm glad to see that the governor has requested additional funds. What we've seen in the interim now is some of our EMS and fire have now started experiencing some of their issues in recruiting and retention as well. As you know, many in the rural communities, many of our volunteer or our firefighters are volunteer agencies. And so as a result of that, it's extremely hard to recruit individuals. I mean, it's one thing that you get paid to run into a burning building, but to actually get a volunteer to run in, that's another issue all in itself. And so many of these volunteer departments are also experiencing statewide issues in getting volunteers, finding those individuals who are willing to go through the training. So it's another thing that New Mexico County is pushing for this year is some retention funds and some recruiting funds that may be made available for our EMS and our fire personnel as well.
George, do you have anything on like to ask Glenn about the recruitment and retention?
Well, I'm interested in your point of view about how significant the money is in recruiting and retention. Dr. Rosser was the keynote speaker at the legislative conference this year, and he was pointing out that for many people, things other than money are the key to retention. What are your thoughts on that? Is the additional money that's coming in helping out a lot with recruiting and retention?
Well, I can tell you with some of the younger entry level that we see coming into law enforcement and public safety, money seems to be a motivator. But when it really comes down to it, study after study has proven this, that on the top 10 list of most employees, if you give them it, money is normally down around five to seven on the list. You'll never see it in the top three. A lot of it is how I'm treated at work or what type of an environment, how much input I have in the process. Do I feel like I'm part of the team, or am I just being told to go out and kind of the assembly line type work? So money is in many of the studies that have been conducted, money never winds up at least in the top three there. But what we're seeing in order to attract the individual, to get them in, a lot of individuals need some seed money. Businesses need seed money to start it up. We're seeing this the same with law enforcement and public safety careers, where if you just give that individual a little seed money, sometimes moving them from one state to another, if you're able to provide for their moving costs, to relocate them into your particular area. That seems to be a hurdle for a lot of individuals. So I guess the jury's still out on that. We're still going to – and it all depends on, San Juan County is a prime example during this last the first initial recruitment session. They were awarded a little over $5 million, I believe, to actually create new positions – to hire new positions. And the way that this first round went was they would pay 100% the first year, 75% the next year, 50% the year after that. And in year four, the county would then have to absorb those costs. It was similar to the federal program of the COPS FAST program. We argued that was not a good way to go about it. At the time, San Juan County Sheriff's Office had 25 positions down. This would have enabled them to hire an additional 25, but if you can't fill the initial 25 that you're down, that money's not going to do you any good whatsoever. And so we sent some our concerns forward to the Department of Finance and advised them in HB 68 that this money was not solely for creating new positions, but it was also for the retention. That we could use them for retention bonuses. As a result, San Juan County was actually able to fill about 15 of those 25 vacant positions and solidify in contract in additional years that their current deputies were signed on, made them sign contracts to receive the retention bonuses, where they'll get them for at least another 2 years. Or the deputy would be required to reimburse the county those retention funds. So we like the way that it's set out. as to whether we're going to be able to attract individuals. I think initially that may be the case, but unless the retention bonuses continue year after year, it's going to be hard to keep those individuals. The grass truly is always greener on the other side.
Absolutely. Wow.
Well, one of the things on the New Mexico County's website that they've identified as a legislative priorities is the creation of a $750,000 fund for reimbursement of transportation costs of state prisoners. You know, to me, this is a really significant issue, but I don't think that many of our listeners have any idea of why this is a priority for the New Mexico counties. Can you share a little bit about that?
Most definitely. So this is an issue that I've been pushing personally as the legislative liaison for the New Mexico Sheriff's Association. And ironically enough, not only do most of the listeners out there, or most of the citizens in Sierra County or in New Mexico, not know about the responsibility the state has to reimburse its counties and its county sheriffs for prisoner transports. Most of your lawmakers don't even know that this exists. It's actually in New Mexico state statute, in law, Chapter 4, 44-18, subsection C, that requires specifically the sheriffs, their guards, and detention officers to be reimbursed for the actual costs of the transportation and extradition of state prisoners. A lot of folks don't know that when an individual goes through the court system and they're sentenced to the Department of Corrections, it's the sheriff's responsibility to transport that individual from the local jail.
So they're the one, yeah, that's the question, who yes. actually transport
these to the prisoners? Okay. Yeah, so we transport them from the local jails to the Department of Corrections. Once they are actually convicted in the court and are housed in our county jails, upon conviction, they are actually considered state prisoners.
Once so who actually pays at that time?
The county.
Is it the county? It's not the state. Okay.
The county. So this is strictly in statute or in law as a reimbursement by the state. So one of the unfunded mandates that we always talk about and you always hear about in local governments, the state requiring local governments and local entities to do something but not reimbursing them. And actually in our Constitution, unfunded mandates are unconstitutional and illegal. So this is one that we've really been pushing year after year after year after year. On average, it is costing an average, and I'm not talking about Bernalillo County or your larger counties like Doniana and San Juan, just your average size county, anywhere from $18,000 to $25,000 annually for the extradition of these prisoners or the transportation of these prisoners. In addition, we're also responsible, your local sheriff is responsible, say an individual accused of a crime, a criminal complaint is filed, a warrant for the individual's arrest is sought and issued by the court. They abscond or they leave the state, but they are captured in another state. It is the sheriff's responsibility or the county's responsibility to travel to that state or arrange for that individual to be extradited from that other state back to New Mexico, back to the courts. Now, many agencies, small rural agencies such as Sierra County's, 12 deputies. If I have to send two deputies off on a four-day road trip to Port Huron, Michigan, to bring an individual back on a felony warrant that has been picked up there, has waived extradition, is willing to come back to New Mexico. Just those 4 days, I have two deputies now that are off the street or no longer providing public safety within our county. So I've got to not only now provide for additional coverage or manpower coverage for those shifts that are unmanned, but we now also have to look at the transportation costs, the per diem, the motels, the total cost involved in getting that individual back. That's why many of your small agencies, your rural agencies, will actually use over-the-road transport companies, professional transport companies that do this day in and day out. one of the problems that we've had with this, especially with the rising gas prices in the nation, those will start out at just from here to, let's say, Texas, $2,500 just to get an individual back here.
Yeah, and you really look at the smaller counties like Catron County, Hidalgo County.
Even Grant County.
Yes. I mean, that's a heck of a cost there.
Yeah, and you have four. Let's say you have five of these a year, and on average that's costing $6,000 per transport. You've got $30,000 out of your county coffers now that are going for this. And the state, by state law, has the responsibility to reimburse the counties. However, it takes a legislative appropriation in which to do so. And what we're finding year after year after year, well, when I first started researching this back in 2015 when I was a first elected sheriff, this had not had a legislative appropriation since 1999 was the last time that monies were put into this. This year, we've been working diligently with our Legislative Finance Council, both on the House and the Senate side, in which to get an appropriation of $750,000. That's just to start with, because it hasn't been funded since 1999. It's hard to get actual numbers from each one of the agencies as to how many transports they've had, which ones constitute reimbursable, as opposed to which ones the county would actually have responsible. Would be responsible for those transports. So we're just asking for, let's just start with $750,000, and anything helps at this point right now, especially when on average your counties are spending anywhere from $18,000 to $25,000.
Well, you know, one of the reasons why I get pretty excited about this is I don't think many people realize that when you're transporting prisoners, that is probably one of the most hazardous situations a law enforcement officer or a correctional officer can be in. You know, if a guy is hearing voices and is capable of being very violent, depending on what the voice in his head happens to say, you know, I don't particularly want to be driving a car that he's in, you know. Do you agree with that?
Sure. Well, that's absolutely correct. That, again, in many cases, even by policy, in most agencies there, if it's more than one inmate and it's more than 400 miles, you've got two guards with that individual. In any of the over-the-road transport companies, professional companies that do this, you're looking a minimum of two guards. Sometimes three, depending on the type of individuals or the charges of the, you know, that's one thing they're always asking whenever you contract their services is, you know, what are they wanted for first and foremost, and how serious is this? I can share a story. One time I was actually flying a prisoner on an airplane, bringing him back from California, and the flight attendant had come to me. And at the time, we could still fly armed. So anyway, we had loaded the prisoner up, and we had what they called a hobble on his leg. We couldn't, obviously, you can't shackle them on public transportation. But we had what they call a hobble. The minute that he stands up, this brace locks his leg in a outward position, wouldn't enable him to run away if he tried to run. But anyway, the flight attendant had asked me, she says, well, how dangerous is this individual? And I said, well, ma'am, I've come all the way from Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, flown on an airplane all the way to San Diego to get this individual. How dangerous do you think he is?
Wow.
So it is. It's probably one of the most dangerous things that we do. Not only and especially now when you're talking, you know, they may be cartel affiliated. You know, the U.S. Marshal Service will tell you, you know, that they have to take extra precautions when and a lot of your smaller agencies may not even have information as to how connected this individual or what type of connections he or she may have. There's always that situation of somebody wanting to effect an escape or assist in an escape.
Yeah, you look at these films, you look at these movies where, you know, there's hijacked or something going on, or whenever they you know, ready to drop off. I mean, it could be very, very, very dangerous.
Correct.
But you know, Raul, one of the things that I kind of take issue with the films that show prisoners in transport hijacking time, the transport, is that they always seem to be so well organized.
And they,
the fact of the matter is that there are a lot of these kinds of incidents are really spontaneous, and you know, and the people who are being transported are not necessarily working at full mental capacity. You know,
absolutely.
And a lot of them have just recently been arrested and are really desperate. You know, it's a kind of situation which is just rife for.
Yeah, the only in the line of duty death that has occurred in my 28-year career in Sierra County was Deputy Kelly Clark, on a prisoner transport, where the again, one of those situations, spontaneous. The individual was actually going to be given probation. He was convicted. But when an individual is convicted of a felony charge in the state of New Mexico, even if they're going to be given probation, they still have to go through the Department of Corrections for a 60-day diagnosis, so that in the event that their probation is revoked and they're remanded back to the custody, they're automatically classified. They know where they have to send the individual. So every conviction for a felony in the state of New Mexico that is remanded to Department of Corrections has a 60-day diagnosis. In this particular situation, she was merely transporting the individual to the state penitentiary for his diagnostic 60-day. And after he finished that 60-day, was going to come back and be placed on probation for whatever the reason, whatever the motivation, decided that he was going to escape in transport.
Interesting.
He didn't want to face a psychiatrist.
likely. I've not been through any of the 60-day diagnostic evaluations that they put those inmates through. But whatever the motivation was, it prompted him to want to escape and to commit a homicide. He shot the deputy in her car while was able to wrestle her gun away from her. And murdered the deputy in transit.
Some people are crazy.
Yes. And you know what, Glenn? You know, on another priority, you know, for the New Mexico counties is a $7.5 million appropriations for reimbursements to counties who are detained for state prisoners. Would you like to talk a little bit about that?
So kind of the same situation here. You know, we house state prisoners in our county detention facilities. We're required to provide detention for those inmates pre-adjudication.
And for how long? I mean, is there a time limit, you know, in the county before they, you know,
so it depends. I know there's been much discussion as to, you know, what constitutes a state prisoner. Now, you know, if the individual is charged by the state police, is that a state prisoner or is it a county prisoner? If the individual is adjudicated guilty and remanded to the Department of Corrections, but then given probation, violates that probation and then is locked up in the county detention awaiting his probation violation hearing, is he a state prisoner? Is he a county prisoner? So this is a lot of the discussion that goes back and forth. The statute indicates, again, that the county shall be reimbursed. Initially, this was, I believe, set at $12 million. And like many of the funds, when New Mexico gets in financial trouble, they'll start pilfering some of these funds, take a little bit of money from here and take a little bit of money there. This thing actually got down to about $2 million a few years ago. And it was we determined that it was costing counties a little over $5 million in most cases.
Yeah, that's what I remember about the $5 million number, because that's where it actually was, and then it dropped down to about $2 million. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. So we've at New Mexico counties and working with the counties that do have detention facilities. As you know, many counties have just completely closed down their detention facilities and contracted those services with neighboring counties. Sierra County is one of them. We're now just a processing or a holding facility until we can get them processed and transported.
And where are they transported to?
So we have contracted with Socorro County and Luna County to house our prisoners for us. But we often, in many times, you may have a parole violator that violates his parole and is picked up and taken to the county detention facility awaiting transport. You have an individual who has been adjudicated in the court, remanded to the Department of Corrections. But the time that that individual is actually in our custody to the time that he's actually transported to the Department of Corrections is considered a state prisoner. And again, I believe that the state has been derelict in their responsibility under the law to reimburse the counties for those detention costs. Detention costs in each one of the counties is, in fact, probably one of the it takes over one third of most county budgets, just operating your detention facilities. And so any opportunity that we have for the state to kick in their share of it and to reimburse us for what the counties are paying for, there was a Senate. A joint resolution through the House and Senate to actually study the state taking over all detention facilities and just have the state manage this. I believe the study come out this last year, November, December. The final report had come out on that, indicating that it was going to be cost prohibitive to do so. So again, as long as those counties are still required to maintain their detention facilities, the state by law is required to reimburse the counties for the housing of their own prisoners.
You know, Raul, this is a really important issue. The cost for detention centers in rural communities is enormous. What is it here? It's about 30% of our county budget?
34%. That's what I wanted to talk
about. About one-third. Yeah,
one-third of the budget. You know, it's quite interesting.
Our detention center here right now is working really hard to gain accreditation. If they do that, they will receive a substantial benefit in terms of a reduced liability policy. The liability exposure for a detention center that does not have the resources to meet accreditation standards is enormous. And with the insurance market being the way that it is right now for law enforcement generally, it's absolutely essential that a great deal of money go to the maintenance and operation of detention facilities.
Well, in any opportunity you have to eliminate costs or to cut costs within your facilities, whether it be reduced insurance rates through accreditation process, or again, whether it be contracting with neighboring counties who need assistance with theirs and are willing to pay those per day costs.
It takes money to do this.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And you know, it really ultimately is the state's responsibility. Yeah. We have, I'll bet you that more than 50% of the prisoners at our county detention center are state prisoners. And it's just fundamentally outrageous that the state doesn't pay for it.
Absolutely.
You know, it's amazing because you look at the 70s and 80s, one of the biggest things that ate up the budget was actually roads, to maintain roads and everything. And look at now, we're facing a big absorption, with these prisons, this transportation. And that's a lot of money. You're looking at $7.5 million. That's a heck of a lot of money.
Yeah, and I can tell you, with New Mexico counties, that's in their goals everybody used to ask me, what does New Mexico counties do? Well, New Mexico counties essentially advocate on behalf of the counties, and in our mission statement, or in New Mexico County's mission statement, right at the beginning, we will oppose any type of legislation that imposes additional costs upon the counties. And we will support legislation which reduces those costs and put shoulders that responsibility on the party that has a responsibility
and
for
not
it.
Only that, it's not only just sheriffs. It helps out on the clerks. It helps on the assessors, sheriff's department. And they're very helpful on, whenever they do these priorities, and they do support, on all elected officials, not just the sheriff's department.
They were talking as I was coming over the hill this morning. They were talking about some of the capital outlay monies that were going to be available this year through the legislative. And I kept thinking that, wow, if these counties, if the state would just pay their fair share and pay the share that they're responsible under the law, how many of these capital outlay projects that the counties would be able to fund?
Yes.
Through additional funds that they would now have in their coffers, as opposed to having to go to their legislative representatives asking for the tens of millions of dollars every year for that may be available to them there. Matching fund projects or something. I mean, again, for every penny that your county is having to spend through taxpayer dollars to increase the sheriff's budget because the state is not reimbursing them by law, or increase the detention budget, that's one less dollar that's available for the parks, one less dollar that's available for the other services that the counties provide.
Go ahead, George.
Well,
I
very enthusiastically agree with you on that, on that one. You know, we've had the opportunity to have Grace Phillips and other people from New Mexico counties come on the show to talk about insurance, and of course, probably the hottest topic in insurance generally for municipalities is insurance for law enforcement agencies. We had a situation here in Silver City where we've had to actually increase the municipal GRT taxes in order to pay off a liability that arose out of a situation involving law enforcement. You probably know the story where the officer killed his girlfriend and then killed himself, resulting in this gigantic kind of liability. Do you have any insight into what the town and what the county can do to try and prevent something like that ever happening again?
So, you know, that's another thing that that I'm happy to see is being addressed and now is actually being talked about in this legislative session. I had the opportunity to meet with to speak with Grace Phillips about a week ago over a proposed bill for some training standards and some mental health monies that would be available. When we start thinking mental health, we automatically think of the homeless individual out there, or the individual that may have a substance use disorder. We're talking about mental health for your public safety individual, your professionals out there in public safety that may be either adversely impact PTSD issues or something as a result of work, you know, some of the workplace stuff there. So I'm happy to hear that there's one, the training standards that are being addressed. Yes. Through our Department of Public Safety and through our Law Enforcement Academy, in including a lot of these mental health issues that are going on in agencies or that the agencies are having troubles with. You know, when I first got into this, you could go out to the crash scene on the interstate there and see the death and the mayhem, and have absolutely no support whatsoever as to whether the officer was having some emotional issues dealing with what they're encountering on a daily basis. And this is becoming more prevalent whenever we have situations like this where they're crying out for help and we don't give them that help, and then it results in a tragedy as unfolded here. So I'm happy to hear that our legislators are now looking at Senator Mo Maestas, as a matter of fact, is one that's looking at making sure that, in addition to increasing the training, but that we're adding our crisis management not only with the individuals we're dealing with, but looking in house to say that, look, after you've dealt with this particular situation, that we have resources available in house to those officers who may be struggling with that.
You know, you're looking at other priorities and. You know, the experience that you have, Glenn, it's amazing. And I've known you probably for the last 8 years, and it's been amazing. When I see you at the legislature, you do a lot of the speaking for the sheriffs and so on. And one of the things that we're losing a lot of this experience, we're losing a lot of these individuals. So another one that that's out there for the priorities under public safety is that return to work. You know, can you talk a little bit about return to work on a lot of these individuals?
So return to work is you're absolutely right. Is what we're, you know, you in law enforcement prior to 2010, all law enforcement were on a 20-year retirement. And a lot of law enforcement, I'd say at least 90 to 95% were taking advantage of that 90 or that 20-year retirement plan. Anyone who got in law enforcement after 2010, Public Employee Retirement Association rules had changed that now requires them to put in 25 years. But even on that 25-year plan, you're getting officers that are coming into this at 21 years of age. So potentially at 46, these individuals are eligible for retirement and can get out of this profession. A lot of them do, but then find out that, well, wait a minute, I think I still have more to contribute. I'd like to come back to work. New Mexico has, for many years now, I'm not sure when the prohibition first went into, or when the law changed on what they call double dipping.
Yes.
I'm not sure when that actually changed, but as a result of it, it has, in fact, prohibited or prevented many agencies from bringing that experience back. And I'll tell you where the hurdle was. And APD was the one that their rank and file union affiliate were the ones that were really pushing to keep the return to work the way it was. But they also had an atmosphere or a situation where you would have a captain that would retire and within 2 weeks would come back as a captain again, now double dipping. So their argument was, is this prevents upward mobility within the department. You have an individual who's put his 25, yeah. 30 years in, is a sergeant or lieutenant, and needs to move up the proverbial ladder, and then is prevented in doing so because they have this culture of bringing back those upper level management positions. So it was a valid argument. We said, but that is something as simple as just putting a provision in there that says, if you leave in this position, you can't come back in this position. Easily fixed. It is going to, I can tell you, if we can get the return to work provision, there's two problems right now. Recruiting. I'm telling you, kids coming out of high school or coming out of a couple of years of college are not wanting to get into law enforcement. It has not been a popular field. It's not been, well, we've been lambasted over the past few years over some bad actors. And as a result of that, New Mexico, when they adopted their Civil Rights Act, took out the or eliminated a provision for qualified immunity. In New Mexico right now, a lot of the entry-level individuals are seeing this as a red flag that I'm not getting in that profession if I have the potential that I'm going to be sued and lose everything that I work for. Again, misinformation that may be out there, but the counties are still on the hook for that. So as a result of that, we've really taken a hit in our ability to recruit. That's why it's more important than any other time that we bring back our return to work provision and enable those qualified, experienced individuals to come back, even if for a short period of time, until we can, we can get those other individuals trained up to a certain level. I lose three or four positions, or we lose three or four positions in Sierra County. That's a third of the agency at that point. If you can't attract those experienced, qualified individuals that are going to need limited training to get back out there in a patrol position, as opposed to an individual that I hire entry level, it's going to 1 year at the very least before I can actually use that individual in a unit by himself out there to get him trained up or get her trained up to that particular level. So very important, that we bring this provision back. I believe that it again, there's a way to do this that will still guarantee that agencies like APD are going to be able to maintain their upward mobility within their agency. And the other fold of it is, recently I'm back as the undersheriff. I termed out. I did my 8 years. But the new sheriff in Sierra County did not have an experienced individual that he could bring in that number two spot. He had several retired law enforcement officers in Sierra County. However, if they return to work, come in as his chief deputy or his undersheriff, they've got to give up their pensions now. And in many cases, the way that because the legislative body sets the salaries for the sheriffs and the elected officials, those salaries are also fixed by your local commission for your chief deputies and your undersheriffs. And in many cases, your captains or lieutenants are actually going to be making more money than what your undersheriff would be able to.
Yep.
So again, another reason why we need the return to work, even if it's just at this case to bring in a chief deputy who may be retired that is willing to come back and take that 25, 30 years of experience and apply it to an administrative type position.
Pretty much in the same boat that I'm looking at right now, not only just in the sheriff's department, but also in the clerk's assessor's office and so on. And it's very beneficial to the, you're there for the public, you're there for the property owners and so on. And very beneficial to have all that experience. And like I said, your new sheriff, it's going to be an easy transition for him to, get back on, not get back on track, but, do what
keep
he needs to
track.
Do and keep it on track.
Yep.
And I'm looking at the same thing in my office where, I do have a wonderful assessor and it's going very smoothly and very positive. And I'm so glad that they're having this as a priority, for the New Mexico counties. And once again, you look at the New Mexico counties, whenever they go out there to vote on this, it's actually all 33 counties go in and vote for these priorities. Am I correct?
Well, that's correct. So we have when we have our post or our pre-legislative conference there or New Mexico Board of Directors meeting when we discuss our legislative issues, each affiliate from your clerks to your treasurers to your probate judges, sheriffs, assessors, each of them, their affiliates come together, determine what particular issues they would like to push within their office. And then bring those issues before the board of directors, which consists of basically representatives from all 33 counties, and then we look at those and vote on those as priorities. So in this particular one here, this was we'll put our legislative issues up on the wall,
up on the board,
and everybody all the board of directors will take their little sticky dot and go put it on the one that they believe we need to push. Return to work. I think we need another page this time. Otherwise, we're going to be putting stickers on the paint. So it was it was definitely overwhelmingly supported by all 33 counties here in New Mexico.
Well, my goodness, George, Ken, Glenn, boy, we're already hitting the top of the hour. Boy, this hour just flew by.
They always do.
And you know what, Glenn, we really appreciate you coming on. And like I said, you being here live and in person is very impressive for you to come from TRC. And then I ask you, if you come over the mountains, I don't know about that. Come the long way home.
I'll probably go over the mountain on the way home there. And I had the ice spots, gave them the opportunity to melt this
morning. Melt down a little bit. And you know what? Come February the 2nd, 9 o'clock. And I do want to thank Susan Mays. She sets up a lot of these interviews, and we'll probably have Joy Esparson, the executive director for the New Mexico Counties, coming on the show on the 2nd of February at 9 o'clock. So, we really keep the ball rolling. We keep the community, we keep the counties, we keep the whole state involved on what's going on from the board of directors on, elected officials from the clerk's office, the assessor's office, sheriff's office, keep everybody abreast on what's going on.
And again, I appreciate the opportunity. Susan does a great job in setting these up. And as I've told you guys here, anytime you need an hour to fill, I'm definitely going to come in. I'll hike over the mountain if I have to.
Well, he's going to be like Brian Moore. We used to have the Brian Moore hour here, during the legislative session. It was just impressive because he didn't have a problem coming on any time. So it was a lot of fun. But you know what? Thank you, Glenn Hamilton. He's actually the undersheriff here at Sierra County Sheriff's Department. And we're hitting the top of the hour. Once again, this is KURU 89.1 FM here in Silver City in Omeco. We got Ken Kepler and not only that, George Carr. And here in the local flavor, Con El Gato Loco, we're having a good time. Life is good. Enjoy this beautiful day. And love you, PJ.
You've been listening to Local Flavor with your host, Raul Turrieta. It's comfort food for inquiring minds on a bed of music, weather, events, and just plain goings-on in southwest New Mexico. It's served up farmhouse fresh and piping hot every Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. with Paula Geisler and Thursdays with Raul Turrieta. So visit often and come hungry for Local Flavor. This is GMCR and KURU, And this is what community radio looks like.
Oh my goodness, you lucky ducks. You are listening to KU.